I'm Duncan MacLeod, and this is Tech Central's TCS Plus, the business technology show, which is brought to you today by ESET. Now, ESET recently published its latest threat report for H1 2024, and we'll include a link to that report in the show notes. But to go through some of the highlights contained in the report, I'm joined now from Cape Town by ESET Southern Africa Group Chief Technology Officer Adrian Stanford. Adrian, it's good to see you again. Welcome. So this report from ESET, I presume, is produced every 6 months. What are the key takeaways for you from the latest findings?
Yeah, absolutely. It's nice to see you again, Duncan. So yeah, you're quite right. Twice a year, the global ESET research team publish a threat report. And it's interesting, you know, if I look at the aggregate data on various threat categories, some of them seem to have decreases in overall detections. So one might be forgiven for concluding that cybercrime in these areas is maybe calming down. But of course, that wouldn't be the correct inference to make. Rather, taking what we know into account is that cybercrime evolves and it's cyclical and there are ebbs and flows. So what we want to pay attention to is the new emerging threats within each category that are likely to become dominant in the future. We should also consider that, you know, in one of these reports, we're just looking at a six-month period, and we don't want to view that in isolation. We want to look at it against the broader scheme of things to get the overall trend. So I think the core theme here is of change, evolution. Some past attack vectors are in decline, some previous attack vectors are returning, and some new ones are emerging.
Okay. Good stuff. All right, we're going to have a look at a quick look at a few of the headline findings from the report, Adrian. We're not going to go through it in enormous amount of detail. Just look at at some of the key findings. But I do recommend for anyone who's interested in reading the report in some more detail to go and have a look at it. And again, we'll include that link in the show notes on the website. But Adrian, let's start with the topic of 2024, and that's generative AI, which, of course, many people are using. I engage with ChatGPT on a daily basis and other AI tools in my work. But I guess the threat actor is also taking a look at these tools as well and using them for nefarious ends. Take us through what some of the cyber crooks are doing with this technology and why we should be concerned about it.
Yeah, absolutely. So, of course, generative AI is everyone's favorite topic. And I've spoken publicly in the past surrounding threats that involve generative AI. And it really comes from Gen AI becoming so mainstream and in the last 2 years. And people and organizations are so enthusiastically exploring their potential. So it comes as no surprise that Gen AI is this increasing target of cyber criminals to exploit. So we see a lot of these kinds of threats in our data, but perhaps I'll just mention the most interesting two called Relied and VDAR. So Relied is it's an information stealer, and it presents as a Facebook ad, and it promises to be a Google Chrome extension that will then give you access to Google Gemini or OpenAI's Sora. And once installed, it actually just looks like Google Translate. But in the background, it's sitting there quietly collecting sensitive information like login credentials as you use your browser. VDAR, on the other hand, it has a similar approach. It spreads via ads online, but it purports to offer a desktop app for Midjourney, which is an AI image generator. But rather than that, it actually delivers an info stealer through a series of steps during the installation process. And then you end up with a keylogger that's stealing credentials or data from crypto wallets or any other information that can be used for financial gain. Now, for the record, Midjourney specifically has no standalone desktop app. It's only available as a bot on Discord, which is a widely used chat app. So please don't follow any links that suggest Midjourney is available as a standalone app, because it's definitely not. And just generally speaking, you know, I find myself using Gen AI all the time. And I have to be honest, because I'm aware that there's so many imitations out there of all these Gen AI providers, I always do find myself having to really double check the URLs or just doing a little bit of extra research on how I'm accessing these services and checking that those access methods are actually legitimate and not fake. Because the internet does seem to be littered with apps and websites and plugins pretending to be these Gen AI services. Meanwhile, in one shape or another, they're just malware.
Mm. I imagine that these Gen AI tools are also helping, malware actors or crooks to compose better emails. For example, I'm very I find it quite useful when I receive a phishing email. I just have a look at it, and usually it's riddled with spelling errors and typos and grammatical errors. But I guess tools like ChatGPT will help these crooks to actually write better emails that look more convincing and suck consumers in that way.
That's absolutely right, Duncan. The big thing with large language models is they make content creation, specifically written content, so much easier. So, if you've got a threat actor that's operating from a non-English speaking country, typically in the past, as you've just mentioned, you'd get maybe a poorly worded email that could be quite easily spotted. But now they can just use generative models like LLMs to create perfect grammar, and not just perfect grammar, but emails that perfectly imitate the tone of whatever organization they might be trying to imitate. So, yeah, it's certainly added a level of scale to phishing that we didn't have 2 or 3 years ago.
Now, the report also touches on, or goes into some detail actually, on deepfakes, specifically in the mobile threat space. I was quite surprised that deepfakes didn't feature more prominently in our recent general election here in South Africa. I am seeing them emerging in the US election. But turning to the report specifically, what threats is ESET seeing from deepfakes, and what can be done about the problem?
Yeah, absolutely. So the report mostly focuses on deepfakes in the context of mobile threats. So we're seeing a lot of changes in behavior of malicious actors in the mobile space. And of course, they're targeting financial gain. And one way they're doing this is that there is malware that targets or steals the facial recognition data that is often used as an authentication mechanism on financial services apps. Now, to be clear, Duncan, we're not talking about the facial recognition data that is stored on your device to unlock it. So for example, if you have an iPhone and you use the Face ID feature to unlock it, that information is typically very secure. So we're not talking about the theft of that information. What we're talking about is when maybe a banking app or a financial services app asks you to take a selfie or even film a selfie where you move your head around a bit and they compare that to the photo of your ID. It's that information that's being stolen. And that information can then be used to create a deep fake, which then malicious actors can use to try and authenticate as you in a financial services app, and they can steal money from you. And I'd like to point out that with this particular malware, this one particularly is called Gold Pickaxe, and it's a possibility on both Android and iOS. It is less common on iOS because there are fewer avenues for infiltration on iOS, but I think it's important to point out that it's not as impossible as many Apple users might believe. There is also another issue around iOS that is on the way, and that is that in the European Union, Apple is being forced to allow apps to be distributed from distribution methods that are not the official Apple App Store. And that's a result of a lawsuit that was eventually settled between EU regulators and Apple. And credit to Apple, they are creating some relatively good safeguards around this, but this new distribution method for apps in the Apple ecosystem does introduce a new risk. And sure, it is only in the EU, but I do think it's important to acknowledge that many South Africans do use Apple IDs from various parts of the world. So we definitely do want to raise awareness about this new change. And finally, there is an older sibling of this Gold Pickaxe malware called Gold Digger Plus, and that it's been making its way into Latin America and South Africa specifically. And I think one of the most interesting insights I found in this part of the report was why these regions are being targeted. And the current theory is that a large proportion of the population have gone through rapid digital transformation. And what that means is they've skipped the step of owning a PC and just gone straight to smartphones where they do everything online, including financial services. So these regions where big parts of the population are entirely smartphone centric are being targeted by this kind of malware. And South Africa is definitely one of those regions.
Scary stuff. Deepfakes. Tell us more about what the report says about deepfakes and some of the other threats that they or risks that they pose to consumers.
It's such a great question, Duncan. This topic of deepfakes is something that genuinely concerns me personally, and the report doesn't specifically cover deepfakes as a general threat area, and that's because it's not actually part of our technical stack offering. But we have published in the past and do actively conduct research detailing how deepfakes are being used just in the industry and in the world in general. And the fact is that it is an increasing problem. And the reason why this concerns me so much is that because the problem is that at a technology level, we, meaning the industry, don't actually have highly effective technical mitigations against deepfakes. And the AI technology behind deepfakes is just getting better and better. And it's kind of outpacing the detection technology that we have as an industry to prevent it. So at the moment, our best defense is mostly user awareness, education, and verification, meaning be aware that deepfake technology can be used to imitate a voice, photo, or video, and always independently verify if someone is using one of these mediums to do something like ask you to transfer money.
Just lastly, Adrian, and I'm particularly interested in seeing this headline come through. As I am a Linux user on my PC at home, I run Linux and have done so for some time. But a highlight of the ESET report is that there is a threat to Linux-based systems. I think it's sort of been assumed, particularly in the Mac world, that Mac computers are not particularly susceptible to malware, which we know is actually not true, that this is very much a Windows-based problem. But there is malware that affects both Mac and Linux. I believe that this is particularly related to some sort of pernicious botnet. Tell us more about this.
Yeah, Duncan, it's a fascinating story, in my opinion, mostly because it's gone on for over a decade. You know, it's going on 15 years now. And it's the reason for this is just it's impressively sophisticated and adaptive. And of course, it's alarming because Linux is so widely used for servers on the internet. So maybe before I continue, just to kind of pick up on your point about macOS, which is a Unix-based operating system, it is true in a similar fashion to iOS that it is a more secure operating system than, say, Windows, but absolutely not immune to malware or cybersecurity threats at all. So, you know, let's put that one to bed. But this specific threat, the eBury malware family, is specifically focusing on actual Linux-based operating systems. In other words, literal Linux, not macOS, which is loosely based on it. So it goes back to 2009. So eBury is basically a family of malware. So we can think of it like a set of tools in a toolbox that this group can use to infect Linux servers. But not only that, they do this through a sophisticated series of infiltration techniques that take advantage of legitimate functions in the operating system, such as SSH, which is a commonly used and assumed to be secure method of connecting remotely to a Linux server. Now, there's nothing wrong with SSH in and of itself, but the way these attacks tend to manifest is they are able to steal the credentials that are then used to connect via SSH to a Linux server. And then once they get into the server, they then hide themselves as legitimate parts of the operating system, such as a shared library. So this makes it really hard for this attack to be detected and removed entirely. Now, our products will detect the eBury malware, but you end up kind of playing whack-a-mole because it just keeps coming back because the attackers have got to the point where they have so many avenues, they're so ingrained in the operating system and so well hidden, they've got multiple avenues to redeploy the malware. So it just becomes very consistent. So going back a little bit, in 2014, 10 years ago, ESET research team published a white paper, you know, describing in detail how this operation works and what to do about it. And a year or so later, some arrests were made and some actions were taken by authorities. Yet still, 10 years later, this malware group was able to keep adapting and their activity persists today. And cumulatively, since 2009, they've infected maybe 400,000 servers. And we estimate that maybe 100,000 are still infected. And we think it's steadily increasing. And I think the scariest part about this is that they've kind of gotten into data centers and infrastructure providers, and that allows them to then conduct these adversary in the middle attacks where they can collect those kinds of credentials and then actually start getting into the servers that's hosted on this infrastructure. So what we're looking at here is it's not just novice users that are getting hit by this. It's knowledgeable Linux administrators as well. And this, again, just speaks to the sophistication of this attack, as well as the potential gaps in the Linux operating system that can be taken advantage of. Now, that is not to say that Linux is an insecure operating system. It's not. But rather, there are specific aspects of it and how it works that need attention paid to it when configuring it to ensure that legitimate parts of it can't be exploited. So 10 years later, after the first white paper, and now after another very detailed investigation, ESET Global Research Team have released another white paper that goes into the latest detail of all the techniques and how this attack operates and what to do about it. And Duncan, here's the real kicker. If you're struggling with this infection and you want to be sure, absolute certainty that it's gone, there are some things described in the paper about what you can do, but the actual recommendation is just to wipe the server and do a clean, fresh install of Linux with all new credentials and some other mitigations that are described in the paper. So it's a really big deal, and I really encourage all Linux administrators to read our white paper about this threat.
So Adrian, just lastly, I see that the report also deals with some of the latest threats around the WordPress content management system, which of course is used by millions of websites around the world. Just take us through the highlights of that.
Yeah, absolutely. So this continues to be such a big problem because as you mentioned, it's such a large proportion of the internet's websites make use of WordPress, and often they're not well maintained, meaning that maybe the version of WordPress is out of date, or even worse, it's plugins that have vulnerabilities. And it's usually those plugins, I would say, more so than just WordPress itself, where there's some kind of vulnerability that can be exploited. And what this means is that malicious actors can get in there and inject scripts, and then they can redirect you without you even realizing to a malicious server that then delivers further malware. And this can actually potentially lead to takeover of the actual server as opposed to simply sitting there, you know, in between the server and the website collecting information. So it's quite a big problem. And the report makes specific mention of the Balada group and new variants emerging from this group. And our telemetry shows that more than 400,000 individual hits from 20,000 infected websites in the last research period have been hit. So it's definitely not an inconsequential problem, and it warrants attention from both users and administrators.
Sounds worrying. Just finally then, Adrian, any sort of concluding thoughts on the report? Anything you want to leave our audience with?
Yeah, absolutely. So, Duncan, if I take a step back, we're still seeing the same fundamental causes of infiltration, such as lack of awareness, social engineering, unpatched vulnerabilities being the most common aspects that are exploited. But let's not oversimplify it. We're still seeing the techniques used by cyber criminals in social engineering become increasingly convincing. The exploitation of vulnerabilities is also becoming more sophisticated, and these malicious actors are becoming better and better at hiding themselves. So detection is becoming harder. And what this means is that you absolutely have to have the right cybersecurity tool set and services that gives you the best possible chance of preventing, detecting, and responding. And it's kind of the area where ESET plays in. But even with the right tool set, awareness and education is still the most important part. And that's why we release these threat reports. It's to help the public and the cybersecurity industry understand how the landscape is evolving and what to look out for.
Well, do go check out that report. It's well worth reading. You can simply Google ESET H1 threat report. You'll find the link. But again, we'll include the link in the show notes to this particular episode of TCS. Plus, Adrian Stanford is Group CTO at ESET Southern Africa. Adrian, it's always good to talk to you. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks so much, Duncan. Really great to be here.